it's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
All right, and we are back, and I'm so excited for this hour. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. Wendell Potter served as the head of corporate communications at Cigna for 15 years following a similar stint at Humana. I first heard about him when he was interviewed by Bill Moyers, and he blew my mind. I was so impressed. I've been working on getting this interview lined up for a while, and we were able to speak this afternoon. Wendell Potter with me on Air America.
Among healthcare reform advocates has lately become a wonderful household name. And we appreciate you, well, speaking out for what you believe in. You've learned a lot, I'm sure, after working 20 years for giant for-profit insurance companies. You are the former head of corporate communications for Cigna. I believe you also worked for Humana for a while. And you're now a fellow at the Center for Media and Democracy. Mr. Potter, I had heard of you, but until I saw you interviewed by Bill Moyers, I didn't know the extent of what you had seen and what you'd been saying. What's it been like in the last month or 6 weeks since you've been really speaking out against what the for-profit insurance companies are doing?
You know, in the 20 years I was in PR for the health insurance industry, I did a lot of interviews. I honestly think I have done more interviews and had the opportunity to speak out about the industry in the last 6 weeks more than I did in the preceding 20 years. It's just been phenomenal. As you may know, I testified before a Senate committee, the Senate Commerce Committee, in late June, and that was followed up, you know, by a few days with the interview that you mentioned with Bill Moyers, and it's just been phenomenal. I've had many opportunities from a lot of different media organizations, print, radio, TV, you name it.
So you've done all these interviews and stuff. Does that perhaps, I don't know, is it cathartic in a way after spending your whole career being sort of an apologist for the insurance companies? Or is that what you think you were as the head of corporate communications for Cigna?
Yeah, I think looking back, I probably was an apologist for the industry. It has been cathartic. I felt that I'm now doing what I should have been doing. You know, I can't regret what I did to a certain extent because I say to someone, I felt like maybe I was a journalist who was undercover for 20 years in the insurance industry, and I learned a lot. If I had not done it, I couldn't be speaking out as I am from an insider's perspective. So in that regard, I can't have regrets for having done it, and maybe it's the timing is such that I can do some good.
Well, I think you're already doing a lot of good just by speaking out and, as you said, giving us the insider's perspective. One of the things that you did in that position was, and you talked about this pretty extensively in the Bill Moyers interview, was help coordinate a concerted effort among the industry to debunk Michael Moore's film Sicko. But you said even when you first saw it, you knew that he was being pretty accurate.
I was very conflicted when I saw the movie because I had done a lot of research myself on the healthcare systems in other countries, and I knew that while every system has its shortcomings, these other countries that were featured in the movie were doing a much better job of providing access to quality care for its, you know, for their citizens than the United States was. And so I knew that what he was reporting was true. Certainly it was a documentary with a point of view, and it was a point of view that the insurance industry certainly would not endorse. But I was conflicted because I knew that it was truthful in many regards. I don't think there was any inaccuracy in there. And I think that it was. And I know it was hard for me to try to be critical of the movie, and I had to be in the role that I was in.
That's got to be difficult. Now, you said that you what happened? Where the metamorphosis from somebody who was entrenched in this world to someone who today is speaking out against the, I'll say it, the evils of the for-profit insurance industry. How did that come about?
Well, it was both gradual and sudden, and I'll explain how that makes some sense. Over the course of a couple of years, I became increasingly disenchanted with the industry and skeptical of the kinds of insurance policies the insurance industry was beginning to market and focus on, almost to the exclusion of traditional plans and even managed care plans that most Americans were forced into back in the 90s by the insurance industry. The new plans that are in vogue that the insurance industry wants all of us to be enrolled in, and mark my word, if we don't get serious reform or comprehensive reform, we all will be in one of these plans whether we like it or not. They feature high deductibles, and the industry calls them consumer-driven or consumer-directed plans, but the consumers had nothing to do with creating these. They were certainly created by insurance executives. And the way they're structured, it shifts more of the financial burden from the insurance companies and their employers onto and people's employers onto the shoulders of working men and women. The average or the median household income in this country is just $50,000, and the average price now of a family premium that you get in the workplace is over $12,500. Now, admittedly, a lot of employers subsidize that, but still, that's a lot of money. And the premiums keep going up. And to compensate for that, to take some of the pressure off employers, the insurance industry is trying to force all of us into these high deductible plans that we'll have to spend more money out of our own pocket before insurance kicks in. So I was becoming skeptical, and I didn't really like having to be in a position of promoting these or defending these kinds of plans. That was the gradual thing. But what really happened to me that made me realize that I definitely needed to change jobs or at least get out of doing what I was doing occurred 2 years ago when I was visiting my family in Tennessee. I picked up a newspaper and saw that there was some kind of a health fair that was being held a few miles on the other side of the Virginia-Tennessee state line in Wise, Virginia, at the Wise County Fairgrounds. And I went to check it out because it was on the front page of the paper, and John Edwards had stopped in to make a campaign stop. This was during the presidential campaign. He hadn't dropped out yet, obviously. And I went up there, but I wasn't prepared for what I saw. I knew it was a big deal, but when I walked through the fairground gate, it was just as if I had been struck by lightning. I can still vividly see the scene of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who were standing, and it was raining that day, standing in the rain, many people without shelter. Some people were huddled under tents, sitting in under shelter, waiting to get care. Much of the care was being provided by volunteer doctors and nurses and other professionals in animal stalls. Volunteers had come to scrub down animal stalls in these fairgrounds in the barn and make it clean enough that doctors could examine patients and treat them in animal stalls. And it was just overwhelming. It was at that moment that I got a clear understanding of the plight that so many Americans are in who don't have insurance or have insurance and can't afford to go to the doctor or pick up the drugs because they just don't have the money to cover the out-of-pocket expenses.
Right, and it is stunning. The group that you're talking about is RAM, Remote Area Medical, and the founder, Stan Brock, was on this show last week. And, you know, he started this organization to go to remote areas of the world where they don't have access to medical care. And now he's doing 65% of his work in the U.S. And in fact, next week, they're going to be set up for an entire week at the Forum in Los Angeles. So much for remote area.
Well, it's true. And exactly. He's going from remote areas to one of the largest urban areas on the planet, and certainly in this country. And, you know, it's just a growing recognition of the problem that people have, whether they live in rural areas or urban areas, if they don't have insurance or have crappy insurance. And one thing about Stan Brock, you may have mentioned, I wasn't able to listen to the interview you did, but he is a British citizen still, but he's lived in this country for, I think, 40 years. He could go back to England and be covered under the National Health Service and not have to worry at all about whether or not he would have access to quality care. But yet he sees the need to be is so great in this country that he has stayed here. He's done the Wise County event that he did most recently a week and a half ago. was the 575th expedition that they've done. And you're right, the vast majority of these are now being held in the United States.
And, I mean, this is the United States of America. It's not supposed to be that way. Now, you know, we're patriotic. We love our country, and we want to say, well, this is the greatest country in the world. But when it comes to health care for our citizens, I can't make that statement. Can you?
No, you can't. And one of the things that I remember very vividly that I thought when I walked inside the fairground gates is, what country am I in? Because it looked like, on the one hand, a developing world, and on the other, some battlefield, because they had these tents were being erected to supplement the animal stalls where people were getting care. It was such a disconnect that you're right. We as Americans want to think that we have the best of everything, and we've always said, or we've been told, that we have the best healthcare system in the world, and people have bought that. But it certainly is not true. We have some terrific facilities. We have great hospitals and treatment facilities around the country. And we've, as a country, have devoted a lot to research. We've done a lot, but the problem is more and more Americans can't access it. They're not able to use it.
We are speaking with Wendell Potter, former head of corporate communications for Cigna, also worked in a similar capacity at Humana. For 20 years, he was in the trenches of the for-profit insurance industry. And honestly, I don't know if it was always as bad as it is now, but it seems like, well, I want to ask you about the practices and how these for-profit insurance companies make money. I guess my first question would be, is if insurance companies actually paid claims and didn't fight people, and we'll get into that, for like Nataline Sarkazian and her family and the others who, you know, we hear these horror stories. If they actually paid claims, would they still be profitable?
You know, that was the original model. In fact, as recently as 1993, percentage of every premium dollar that insurance companies collected, on average, they paid out to pay claims to doctors and hospitals and other healthcare providers. Now it's just about 80% or 80 cents on every dollar. Since that time, since 93, we've seen a huge shift in the industry, to the point that now the industry is dominated by a handful of very, very large for-profit companies. Back in the early 90s, we still had a lot of non-profit companies, including, in fact, most of the Blue Cross Blue Shield plans at that time were still nonprofit. Many of them have converted to for-profit status and are now have been acquired by this behemoth called WellPoint. It and United are the two very largest health insurance companies. Aetna and Cigna are third and fourth, and then you have three more who are large. The seven of them are essentially kind of a cartel that. One out of every three Americans now have a benefit plan that is owned or operated by one of those companies. So we've got the hands of, the health insurance industry is really controlled by these giant companies. And they're accountable to Wall Street because they're for profit. And they have to report their earnings, their revenue figures to investors every 3 months. And the investors want to make sure that they're doing all they can to spend less and less of that premium dollar on medical care so that more and more of it is available to go into their pockets as investors.
So would it be reasonable? I mean, obviously, in my best case scenario would be to put all these guys out of business and just have a single payer system, Medicare for all in the U.S. Your thoughts on that?
Well, that is something that many members of Congress also agree, but the insurance industry is so powerful that it has been able to keep that from being a serious piece of legislation in Congress. It has been able to get members of Congress like Senator Max Baucus, who's chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, saying that the single-payer approach is off the table. It's not being considered, and that is a testament to the power of the insurance industry. That obviously would be the ultimate problem for them, because it essentially would put them out of business as we know them today anyway. They might be able to operate selling supplemental policies, but they can't even do that in Canada, to my knowledge. But that is what is going on. Even the president is his approach is more of a pragmatic approach that takes into consideration just the enormous clout the health insurance industry now has as a result of its power and influence and the vast resources it has and the money it spreads around all over Capitol Hill.
Right, and that takes me back to my contention that it's always the main issue here is campaign finance reform. We got to get the money out of politics because as long as politicians are taking bribes, campaign contributions from big business, they're always going to be beholden to special interests. And
they are.
Right. That's how it works.
That's how it works. And over the course of the last several years, the insurance industry has certainly financed or contributed very, very heavily, primarily to Republican candidates, to the point that they can count almost to a one getting the votes in Congress from the Republicans. They can pretty much control how they vote. When the insurance industry saw the political wind shifting and more Democrats were likely to be elected, they began to put their money on the more conservative Democrats who were running so that they would at least have some friendly Democrats in office. So what you have, you've got the Republicans pretty much sewn up. They will vote the way the insurance industry wants them to because they're ideological allies and they've been bought some years ago. Now the money has been going into these so-called blue dog Democrats in particular because the insurance industry sees them as the best opportunity to keep legislation from being passed that will do any kind of damage to their ability to make money.
Right. Let's go back to the question about insurance companies making money. When they did pay claims more than they do now, there was still enough of a profit margin in there for them to make money. But I guess greed wins out and they want to make more money. So insurance companies have upped the practice of rescission, right? When somebody files a claim, the company will go back into their application and try to. We've heard things where somebody maybe had cancer and then was denied on the grounds that they didn't report a history of acne, things like that.
That's true. It's a true case. A woman testified before Congress that her policy was canceled because she had failed to disclose, apparently, that she at some point in the past had been treated for acne. And the insurance industry, her insurance carrier, contended, well, it was precancerous. So, how was she to know that at the time? It was something she had no notion of, and I'm sure she'd forgotten that she had even been treated for acne. I would have, I think. It wouldn't have been anything I would have thought would have been necessary to put in an application. But that's what they do when individuals who buy their coverage outside of the workplace, and many people have to do that, they're very, very vulnerable if they get sick or injured. And their medical claims that go back to the insurance company, they will start looking at the original application you filled out just to see if possibly they can catch you not having disclosed something that they thought was relevant. And it could be something that you had completely forgot about and often didn't even know. Sometimes they have access to doctor's notes that might indicate something that the doctor didn't tell you, so you couldn't possibly put it in your application, but they will still cancel your policy.
And that's legal?
It is legal. There is a lot that goes on that I think people would be astonished is legal in this country and should be outlawed as part of reform, but it is absolutely legal. And the insurance company representatives who were brought before Congress to be asked about this practice were asked point blank, will you quit this practice, at least for those who didn't commit any fraud? And they said no. They don't have any intention of changing their practices. It's legal. It's legal for companies to exclude anyone who buys a policy in the individual market who has a pre-existing condition. It's legal for them to cancel your policy later on, even if you've paid your premiums on time every month for years. It's legal for the insurance companies to purge small businesses from their roles if someone who is employed by that small business gets sick or injured and has big claims. The things that are legal in this country and that the insurance industry does as common operating practice is just astonishing.
Wendell Potter, should for-profit insurance companies be allowed to operate in this country? Should healthcare and healthcare insurance be a not-for-profit venture?
I think we were better off certainly before we saw this conversion to for-profit status, because these companies are by law required to, their main focus has to be maximize shareholder value. That's what they have to do, which means that that's what they focus on month after month. It's not on your well-being. So, yeah, I think that the country was far better off when we were in a system where we have a private industry, a private insurance industry. We were much better off when the majority of those companies were nonprofits.
And a nonprofit insurance company, I don't want people to get the wrong idea, and maybe they just don't know, people still make money. You still have a CEO who gets a salary, but it's not going to be an obscene salary like we've seen the for-profit insurance company CEOs. They still employ people who all, make a living. It's just that any profits they might make get put back into the system, and they actually help people rather than just, as I liken them to, rather than just being a parasite and a leech sucking the lifeblood out of the healthcare system.
I think you're right. I agree with that.
So so where do we go from here? I mean, why do people, I hear polls that say the majority of Americans are happy with the healthcare they have. Where is that coming from?
Well, here's the reason why there are polls that show that. First of all, that's typically these are often polls that are commissioned for the insurance industry. But keep in mind that most people don't really need to use their insurance benefits on a regular basis. 20% of the cost, or 80% of the cost of healthcare are used by 20% of the population. So most people don't use their benefits that much. So they don't know what they would be facing if they really did get sick or seriously injured. The other thing is they don't really know what the alternatives are. We've always had a system like this. No one really has, at least very few of us, have been exposed to an approach of another country. Not many of us have lived in Canada or in Europe. So there's not very much that we have to compare our system to. And again, going back to what we said, people think in America we have the best of everything. So, of course, my plan is pretty good. So there's a lot going on there that would make someone say that they're happy with their health plan. They don't know any different, and they don't usually use it.
Yeah, it would be interesting to ask some of these people who respond favorably a follow-up question and ask them if they've ever submitted a major claim and, then had to deal with them, going back through the records or disallowing a surgery or whatever. Maybe they just haven't gotten to that point yet, and that's why they responded that way.
That's true, and just one final point. They also don't really take into consideration that if they get their insurance through their workplace, they're just a pink slip, a layoff, or a business failure away from being in the ranks of the uninsured. People don't really think about that until that happens to them.
Well, you're right. Wendell Potter with us, former head of corporate communications for Cigna, who's now one of the best whistleblowers out there. And Wendell, you have my undying gratitude for what you're doing, the way you're speaking out. I'll put myself out here as an example. I lost my job at a local radio station back in August, a year ago. It'll be a year ago later this month. I'm on COBRA, which I get for another 6 months. You have access to it for 18 months. At the end of that time, I'm not sure what I'm going to do because I guess I've got two pre-existing conditions. I have a thyroid problem, and I had a malignant melanoma. So let me ask you this. Am I ever going to be able to get covered for cancer if we don't get health reform passed?
I would say probably not. I think your chances are going to be pretty remote. I wish I could give you a more encouraging answer, but people are turned down all the time. You can look on the California Department of Insurance, I looked the other night just at the things, the pre-existing conditions that can be used automatically to deny you coverage. And certainly a history of cancer is one of them. So good luck. I wish I could say more that would be encouraging, but I don't know what you will do. You might be able to get a policy that will not pay for anything related to cancer treatment should that ever be needed. But isn't it crazy that we live in a country where you might be able to get insurance, but it won't cover what you need it for?
It is insane. And this is why I've gone on record. I've said this for a long, long time. I really think that the for-profit health insurance industry we have in this country is government-sanctioned extortion. Because you got to pay every month. If you don't pay, if you go without paying, and sometime down the line you decide you want insurance, you're not going to be able to get it. And then even if you do, well, maybe we'll cover you, maybe we won't. We can always go back and find some reason to say we're not paying for that claim.
Yeah, and you know what? It could get worse with some kind of reform. One of the proposals is to require us all to be insured, which is not a bad thing. But if the requirement is that we all have to buy our insurance through the current private system, again, dominated by for-profit companies that are answerable to Wall Street, most of the people who are uninsured right now are uninsured because they simply can't afford it, which means that they would be required to buy it, and the only way they could do it would be to get subsidies from the government, meaning your tax dollars and mine would flow in billions of dollars into these for-profit companies.
Yeah, so it would be a government mandate to buy a policy from a for-profit company that we still don't have any guarantees is going to pay off on your claims when you need them.
That's right. And talk about a bailout of an industry that doesn't need a bailout is exactly what it would be.
That's pretty sick. Is there any possibility that we may see? I mean, I'm still hoping we'll get a public option that will actually work, that will be, as they say, robust enough to make a difference. Barring that, is there any chance that we'll see a rise of maybe some nonprofit health insurance companies who might actually be in it for the good of the health of the people in this country?
It's not going to happen, regrettably, because the for-profit insurers have got the market locked up. There are barriers to entry in any given geographic market. There are one or two companies that are very dominant. In many markets, one or two insurers control about 95% of the market. They won't let competition come in. If you'd like to think that a nonprofit could make a go of it, in fact, the idea that we could have these cooperatives that could be created that would compete against these four big for-profit giants is just ludicrous. It's not going to happen.
It's very disheartening, but Wendell Potter, I appreciate you speaking out so openly and honestly, so hopefully people will be informed, will understand what's at stake here, and we've got the next 4 to 6 weeks when Congress is on recess to meet with our representatives and drive home these stories and tell them that we really need reform, and without a public option, we've got nothing. Because just subsidizing and letting these for-profit insurance companies go on unchecked as they've been is just taking a bad situation and making it worse.
I agree, 100%.
One final question. Have you gotten any backlash from former colleagues since you've been speaking out, or maybe the opposite? Have any others come and joined you?
None have come to join me, but I've had scores of emails and phone calls from former colleagues who have said, keep going, I wish I had the courage that you had, or thank you for doing what you've done. I'm not sure that I have courage, but at least I expressed appreciation for what I'm doing. I really haven't heard from people who are currently employed in the industry. I think they're concerned about it for whatever reason. And the industry, I don't think, knows exactly what to do about me. So consequently, I haven't heard from them, at least at this point.
I understand. Well, Wendell Potter, I know for this I can speak on behalf of my listeners. Thank you for speaking out and for all you continue to do. I really appreciate it. And appreciate
you.
Joining
appreciate
me. And thank you for joining me today on Air America.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks again. And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
I trust we can. Just call me anytime.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.